Okay, let's unpack this. The government technology sector, this massive multi-trillion dollar world of GovTech, it's suddenly become, well, the highest stakes battleground in modern business. This isn't just about selling software anymore. This feels like a fundamental collision between two tech giants. And they're really redefining how America approaches national security, federal procurement, everything.
It is. What we're seeing is much more interesting than just a typical corporate rivalry. It really feels like a war of ideologies, doesn't it? A conflict between, fundamentally different technology platforms and a true test of just sheer corporate scale. It's that commercial efficiency model versus the specialized intelligence approach. And the battlefield, it's the entire digital defense infrastructure of the US.
And that collision, that's exactly what we're focusing on in this deep dive. Salesforce, the undisputed king of commercial cloud CRM, going head to head against Palantir
The
Technologies.
enigmatic leader, yeah. Premium data intelligence for defense for the IC.
So our mission today, for you listening, is to really equip you with a full understanding of this rivalry. We're going to dig into the major contract wins, these strategic political chess moves.
And that crisis of confidence, that's a big one. Hitting one of the incumbents pretty hard.
Absolutely. You need to know how this battle is going to shape the future architecture of government IT. Because honestly, it impacts everything, right? From military logistics all the way down to how quickly a veteran gets their benefits.
It really does. It's foundational stuff.
It's quite a tale, isn't it? Two titans that, well, until very recently, they seemed to operate in completely separate orbits.
Worlds apart, almost.
But they converged dramatically around 2025. So let's start with Salesforce. This is a company built entirely on scalable, multi-tenant cloud platforms, driven by that flexible, subscription-based SaaS model.
Software as a service, right? Very different DNA.
Totally. Culturally, they've got this long history as a progressive voice in tech. Marc Benioff leading the charge, famously. Their focus has always been, maximizing commercial enterprise workflow, CRM efficiency.
And then you've got Palantir. I mean, this company was literally forged in the fires of post-9/11 intelligence needs, created to serve that secretive, demanding world. They build bespoke, highly specialized data fusion platforms. Their business model, it's consultative. The pricing is absolutely premium.
And politically very different, too. Co-founder Peter Thiel, a major force on the right.
Huge force. Their focus is squarely on that specialized high-end data analytics for defense and intelligence. The really exquisite hard problems.
So why are these two behemoths suddenly clashing on the same turf? What happened?
Well, the convergence point really hit hard around 2025. That overlap area, enterprise data management, logistics, decision support, it suddenly became the central battleground. And I think it was fueled by maybe three big things. One, the maturation of AI tools, they got really powerful. Two, this massive federal push for IT modernization across all agencies.
That mandate.
And three, frankly, a political environment that was, let's say, volatile enough to allow new aggressive players into spaces that were historically kind of protected.
That makes sense. So that overlap area, the stuff Palantir maybe saw as secondary.
Exactly. Stuff may be considered administrative or lower priority by Palantir historically. Suddenly, it became critical. Salesforce looked at the enormous spend on logistics, personnel management,
Saw an opening.
a huge opening. They realized they could apply their commercial scale to, well, commoditize key segments of that high-margin GovTech market. They are coming in to eat Palantir's lunch on everything that isn't core counterterrorism or, high-end command and control.
Which sets the stage perfectly for our first section, Salesforce's offensive. This feels like a really aggressive campaign. They seem to be consciously weaponizing that SaaS model against Palantir's traditional approach.
That's a good way to put it. Weaponizing sauce. The strategy is simple, but pretty brutal. A cost-driven invasion. Salesforce is just applying its vast commercial scale to challenge segments where Palantir traditionally charged premium rates for highly customized work. They're undercutting Palantir's dominance with a platform that's inherently cost-effective, built for multi-agency scale.
And faster to implement, presumably.
Much faster. Designed for rapid implementation, not years of bespoke tailoring. That's a huge selling point for agencies under pressure to modernize quickly.
And the moment, the flashpoint that really validated this whole strategy, that hit in July 2025, right? The U.S. Army contract win.
That was the big one. A Salesforce partner, Computable Insights, secured a major 5-year enterprise license agreement, an ELA, with the Army. valued around $100 million.
Not small change.
All right.
And not just a pilot project either. This is a massive adoption of their platform.
Exactly. This ELA was way more than just $100 million. It was a loud signal that the high-cost barrier to entry in these large DoD contracts was, well, cracking.
And Mark Benioff knew it.
Oh, he sensed the momentum. He went public, publicized the win, and specifically confirmed it was secured because of Salesforce's much lower prices and proven AI-driven solutions.
Wow. That quote basically tells every procurement official in Washington
exactly what they need to know. There is now a cheaper, commercially proven way to modernize large parts of their operations.
The strategic impact here is just profound. For you listening, this contract basically validates the idea that the commercial SaaS model can effectively compete with and actually displace Palantir's traditional high-cost consultative model in massive defense procurement.
Right. And the Army PEO, the Program Executive Office, they specifically lauded the ELA for achieving efficiencies and using the Army's, quote, full purchasing power to get exceptional rates.
So a win for the taxpayer, maybe, but a huge strategic blow to Palantir's premium pricing narrative.
Absolutely. Every other DoD agency, every civilian agency, too, now has this essential reference case. It confirms they have a viable, scalable, and significantly cheaper alternative for their enterprise-wide software needs.
Things like logistics scheduling, HR, supply chain management.
All that crucial but maybe less glamorous stuff. This opens up billions of dollars in potential recurring revenue that Palantir historically saw as its periphery, or maybe took for granted.
And Salesforce didn't waste any time capitalizing on that win, did they? September 2025, they announced Mission Force.
Right, a brand new dedicated business unit, specifically targeting national security, defense, and the intelligence communities. This wasn't some side project. It felt like a declaration of war.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And look at their target areas, strategically brilliant, because they kind of sidestep Palantir's core strength in intelligence analysis. Mission Force is focusing on personnel readiness, logistics, and sustainment, decision support.
Areas where CRM and workflow automation are a natural fit. Salesforce's bread and butter.
Exactly. They're going after the administration and organization of defense, not necessarily the sharp end of intelligence operations.
And their stated goal. It sounds designed to appeal directly to the Pentagon's current focus on fiscal accountability and efficiency.
It is. To help warfighters and the organizations that support them operate smarter, faster, and more efficiently. It's an efficiency play, pure and simple, just wrapped in the language of national security.
So what's the engine driving this? Technologically speaking,
the engine is Salesforce's AI platform, AgentForce, specifically tailored now as AgentForce for public sector.
Yeah.
And crucially, they're positioning this AI as an augmentation tool.
The human in the loop approach.
Precisely. They know government workforces are skeptical, maybe even fearful, of AI replacing humans. So they're selling a tool to make existing employees exponentially better, faster, more efficient. Not replace them.
So our positioning and the use cases they're highlighting are deliberately low risk, but a high impact, right?
Definitely. Think about automating those repetitive, time-consuming tasks that just clog up federal agencies. We're talking recruitment automation, filtering hundreds of thousands of applicants efficiently.
Or processing benefits applications, handling initial service requests.
Exactly. We saw that pilot with the city of Kyle, Texas, where AI agents guided citizens through complex service requirements. That frees up federal employees to focus on the higher value work, the stuff that really needs human judgment.
It's a non-threatening way to introduce AI and show value quickly.
It overcomes that cultural skepticism. And their ecosystem advantage amplifies this hugely. They're partnering with massive IT services players like Infosys.
Okay.
Combining AgentForce with Infosys's implementation expertise, their Topaz AI platform. This partnership model lets Salesforce scale its implementation reach dramatically.
Something Palantir, with its reliance on those expensive forward-deployed engineers, struggles with.
They just can't match that kind of scale-out model. It's a different philosophy.
Salesforce is also building an infrastructure moat, focusing on compliance and easier procurement. Tell us about that.
Yeah, two key things here. First, compliance. The cornerstone is Salesforce Government Cloud Plus achieving FedRAMP High authorization.
Okay, let's pause on FedRAMP High for a second. Why is that so crucial?
Right. FedRAMP is the government's standardized security assessment for cloud products. Getting high authorization is tough. It's a stringent security standard. Achieving it basically pre-approves their platform for use across the government for highly sensitive, but importantly, unclassified data.
So it removes a major hurdle for agencies.
A massive hurdle. It eliminates months, maybe even years, of agency-specific security checks. It makes Salesforce the path of least resistance for many IT modernization projects that don't involve, you know, state secrets.
And they're actively greasing the wheels on procurement, too.
They are. The GSA, the General Services Administration, announced a government-wide buying agreement back in May 2025. It reduced the price of Slack's enterprise version, which Salesforce owns now, by a staggering 90% for federal agencies.
90%, wow.
Yeah. This kind of proactive pricing makes Salesforce incredibly attractive. When procurement officers are looking for quick, easy, cheap modernization solutions, Salesforce is practically handing them the contract on a silver platter.
But it can't be all smooth sailing. Despite this initial success, Salesforce must be facing some serious challenges.
Oh, absolutely. Deeply entrenched challenges. First, there's still a credibility gap. They have to overcome deep cultural skepticism in the defense and intelligence communities.
Communities that historically distrust general-purpose commercial platforms.
Exactly. They favor highly specialized, mission-built solutions. Commercial off-the-shelf can be a dirty word in some circles.
And that Army ELA, as big a win as it was, is now a massive high visibility test case.
Mm-hmm.
The execution risk must be huge.
Immense. Any failure, a security breach, a major implementation delay, not delivering those promised cost savings, it will be immediately magnified. And you can bet competitors like Palantir will weaponize it, slamming doors shut for future contracts.
Then there's the security perception challenge.
Right. Even with FedRAMP High, Salesforce has to constantly battle the perception that its multi-tenant cloud architecture, where multiple customers share underlying infrastructure, is inherently less secure than Palantir's bespoke or potentially air-gapped systems.
And in national security, perception can be reality.
It often matters just as much as the compliance certificate itself. They need flawless execution to overcome that perception.
Okay, so let's pivot dramatically now to Section 2. Palantir's kingdom under siege. For years, Palantir seemed to benefit from this perception of, well, almost invincibility, technological, political superiority. But that armor is definitely showing some cracks.
Serious. Systemic cracks, yeah. To understand Palantir's strength, though, we first have to grasp what makes their technology unique. It's this concept of the ontology-driven moat.
Okay, break that down for us. Ontology sounds academic. If Salesforce is like an advanced filing cabinet, what's Palantir's ontology?
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Think of it this way. A standard database, like Salesforce might use for CRM, is basically an index. It organizes clean, structured data based on simple rules, name, date, ID number. Like sorting books by title or author. Palantir's ontology, which is at the heart of their Gotham platform for government and Foundry for commercial, is more like a conceptual framework, a map of the real world. It integrates vast amounts of messy, disparate data sensor feeds, intelligence reports, unstructured text documents, personnel records.
Data that doesn't fit neatly into rows and columns.
Exactly. And instead of just indexing it, the ontology maps the complex relationships between these items. It understands the connections.
So it connects the dots conceptually, even if the data comes from totally different, non-standard sources, like linking a person to an event through multiple indirect data points.
Precisely. It doesn't just know that person A is linked to event B.
Yeah.
It knows how person A might be linked to event B, maybe through location data, financial transactions, shared communications, network connections. It creates this dynamic digital model of the real world.
Which allows users to find hidden patterns.
Hidden patterns, uncover networks, and provides what they call actionable depth. It helps explain the reasoning behind complex intelligence conclusions. That's why it's so indispensable for high-stakes decision-making where failure is, frankly, catastrophic.
And their deployment capability, using their system called Apollo, that's critical too, isn't it, for reaching difficult environments?
Absolutely critical. Apollo is their continuous delivery system. It allows Gotham and Foundry to be deployed in literally any environment. We're talking major commercial clouds like AWS or Azure, closed military networks.
And even places with no network connection.
Critically, yes.
Yeah.
Completely disconnected battlefield bases, submarines, secure facilities, what they call air-gapped systems. This deployment flexibility is a huge differentiator. It's why they're indispensable for mission-critical functions like counterterrorism, targeting, command, and control. Salesforce simply cannot offer that level of air-gapped on-premises flexibility right now.
Okay, so that's the strength. But all that technological supremacy, that reputation, it took a devastating blow in October 2025. Palantir faced this severe crisis of confidence because of the NGC2 vulnerability leak.
Yeah, that leak was catastrophic because Palantir's entire brand, its whole value proposition, is built on trust and handling the nation's secrets securely.
And this wasn't some external hack. It was an internal U.S. Army memo that leaked,
authored by their own CTO, Gabrielle Chiuli, concerning the next-generation command and control prototype NGC2, which was developed jointly with Palantir, Anduril, and Microsoft, a flagship project.
And the memo was not flattering, to put it mildly.
No. It labeled the prototype very high risk, and it's citing fundamental security problems that made it vulnerable to insider threats, data spillage. For a defense contractor like Palantir, that is just about the worst possible assessment you can get.
What were the specific allegations? They sounded pretty serious.
They were shocking, especially given Palantir's reputation. First, the memo alleged a stunning lack of access controls. It basically stated that any authorized user could access all applications and all the underlying data, regardless of their actual clearance level or need to know.
Wait, seriously? So a low-level analyst logged into the system could potentially see top-secret data they weren't cleared for?
That was the direct implication in the memo, yes. A fundamental, almost unbelievable violation of modern zero trust security principles. Just basic security hygiene, really.
Wow. Okay, what else?
Second, the memo revealed a reported lack of an audit trail. The system allegedly couldn't log user actions effectively, which makes it impossible to track who accessed what when. You can't definitively prove if sensitive classified information was misused or inappropriately accessed.
In the intelligence world, if you can't audit, you can't trust. End of story.
Pretty much. It undermines the entire system's integrity. And finally, there was this unvetted code issue.
Right. That sounded like an integration nightmare waiting to happen.
It was a massive red flag. Apparently, third-party applications integrated into this NGC2 system were bypassing standard Army security assessments and vetting procedures.
So they were just plugging things in without checking them?
Effectively. The memo cited one integrated app that had 25 known high-severity vulnerabilities. Three other apps had over 200 documented flaws just sitting there, awaiting review. It suggests a systemic failure in how these complex systems were being integrated and secured.
Regardless of whether Palantir's core platform itself was vulnerable, the integrated whole was the problem.
Precisely. Palantir tried damage control, of course. They dismissed the memo as an outdated snapshot, asserted that no vulnerabilities were found in the Palantir platform itself, but the reputational damage was significant.
Because now Salesforce has a powerful counter-narrative.
Exactly. Palantir isn't just expensive anymore. They might actually be risky in practice when integrated into complex, multi-vendor military environments. That seed of doubt is planted.
And that feeds directly into Palantir's second major vulnerability, the crisis of cost. This is where that Wall Street valuation difference really becomes a factor.
It really does. Palantir's stock trades at this very lofty forward price-to-earnings ratio. It's hovered around 178, 180 sometimes.
Which is huge. That's pricing in massive exponential growth.
It's a bet on continuous exponential growth in those premium high-margin contracts. Salesforce, meanwhile, trades at a much more conventional multiple, around 21, 22, standard for a large enterprise software company.
And this valuation gap highlights their fundamentally different delivery models, right?
Absolutely. Palantir relies on those bespoke, custom-built solutions. That inherently requires large capital expenditures, CapEx, which means multi-year appropriations from Congress, long, difficult budget approval cycles, hard to get funded quickly.
Whereas Salesforce offers that predictable, scalable, subscription-based model, that's operational expenditure funding, OpEx.
Much easier for procurement officers to approve OpEx funding through their annual operating budgets than to secure large, unpredictable CapEx appropriations for custom, one-off projects. It fits the budget cycle better.
So the Salesforce Army win proves that a lower-cost, predictable OpEx alternative now exists for many of these non-core intelligence workloads.
And that directly challenges Palantir's premium pricing narrative. If federal agencies start to consciously bifurcate their IT spending,
meaning use Palantir only for the really high-end specialized intelligence tasks.
Right. And shift everything else, logistics, HR, admin, basic data management, to cheaper, more scalable platforms like Salesforce. Well, that dramatically caps Palantir's total addressable market. It puts a ceiling on their growth potential.
Yeah. Despite these twin crises, cost and confidence, we have to be clear, Palantir isn't dead in the water. They still hold some incredibly important large-scale contracts at the highest levels.
Absolutely not dead. They maintain indispensable contracts, proving there's still deep trust for the most complex, most sensitive jobs. You can't overlook that.
Yet the complexity of the mission itself keeps them entrenched in certain areas. We see that $795 million modification for the Army's Project Maven that's central to high-stakes battlefield AI, analyzing imagery. Critical stuff.
Critical. And they also secured that massive $385.4 million contract with the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, for its analysis and statistics platform. That shows reach into major civilian agencies, too, not just DOD.
And perhaps the clearest indicator of core trust, despite the NGC2 issue, is that huge 10-year enterprise agreement with the Army, sealing up to $10 billion, consolidating 75 existing contracts.
That's a massive vote of confidence. It shows the Army still views Palantir as the foundational platform for its mission-critical, high-level operational and intelligence functions. The real battleground, the fight we're seeing now, is for that adjacent enterprise territory, the stuff Salesforce is aggressively targeting.
Okay, this is where, for me, it gets really interesting. Because this rivalry has jumped completely off the tech specs and the balance sheets and landed squarely in the strategic political arena, or in Section 3, the political chessboard.
Yeah, this is not just business competition anymore. This is a game of strategic political neutralization. It's fascinating.
And it really starts with the foundational edge Palantir always seemed to have.
Yeah.
What you call the Thiel Doctrine.
Right. Peter Thiel's deep, long-standing influence in conservative and libertarian political circles, that was Palantir's original, almost untouchable moat.
Thiel has maintained very close ties to conservative leadership, the Republican establishment, backing major campaigns for years. His influence arguably ensured Palantir had unparalleled access, created this perception that they were the ideologically aligned, essential partner for the defense establishment.
The politically safe choice, almost the default choice, for high-end national security missions under certain administrations.
And that political ecosystem building is crucial too, right? Through his founders fund, Thiel actively backs other defense startups, like Anduril.
Which was co-founded by Palantir alumni, remember? It creates this sort of politically aligned consortium of defense contractors. They speak the same language, operate under the same political umbrella. It gave Palantir a massive inherent advantage in sensitive, high-level procurement discussions.
Okay, hold on to your hats, because now we get to the high drama. The Benioff shift. Mark Benioff. For years, he was positioned as the progressive conscience of the tech industry, right? Hosting Clinton fundraisers, championing gender pay equity.
The archetypal liberal tech CEO.
And then, in October 2025, he executes this dramatic, breathtakingly calculated political realignment. This must have caused absolute whiplash inside Salesforce's famously liberal corporate culture.
Oh, you have to imagine. Absolute whiplash is probably an understatement. The pivot was loud, public, and unambiguous. Benioff publicly declared he avidly supported President Trump, praised key Trump allies by name,
and controversially endorsed that highly political proposal to deploy the National Guard in San Francisco to deal with urban crowd issues.
That specific endorsement, aimed at his own famously liberal city, generated immediate public outrage from San Francisco's Democratic leadership. It wasn't some quiet campaign donation. It was a clear, tactical, public statement designed to be heard in D.C.
And the timing. Right after the Army contract win and the Mission Force launch. That can't be a coincidence.
Absolutely not. This was a signal broadcast at maximum volume aimed directly at federal procurement officials and political appointees.
So what was the specific strategic goal there, beyond just shock value?
It was simple. Political de-risking. Pure and simple. The goal was to signal clear political alignment to the current administration, to ensure federal buyers no longer perceive Salesforce as a politically risky, progressive outsider vendor.
He basically adopted Thiel's playbook, playing the political game to neutralize Palantir's advantage.
Exactly. He effectively stripped Palantir of its unique status as the sole politically favored vendor in that ecosystem. This forces the competition back onto the grounds of price and technology, where Salesforce believes it has massive structural advantages.
So the strategic implication is profound. The contest is no longer aligned conservative insider versus progressive outsider.
Now it's a battle between two politically acceptable vendors, at least in the eyes of the administration, forcing agencies to make choices based more on utility and cost rather than perceived political alignment.
It levels the playing field in a really interesting way. But wow, the risks for Salesforce must be enormous. They are walking such a tightrope here.
A very high tightrope. This political pivot carries massive risks. You've got potential internal cultural friction, serious backlash among their historically liberal employee base, maybe even alienation among commercial clients who valued Salesforce's progressive brand image. It's a huge gamble.
A calculated high-stakes corporate maneuver, all aimed at unlocking this multi-trillion-dollar GovTech market.
That's the prize they're chasing.
Okay, let's move to Section 4 and do a direct head-to-head comparative analysis. We really need to define precisely how these two companies, despite the new overlap, are still solving fundamentally different classes of national security and government problems.
Yeah, this is key. Let's start with their AI philosophies, because that really defines their core products. Salesforce, with Agentforce, is focused squarely on augmentation and efficiency.
Making existing processes better.
Right. Their AI is designed to optimize known, repeatable processes. Think of it as a force multiplier for paperwork screening millions of resumes accurately, processing standardized benefits applications faster, handling routine inquiries. It tackles volume and minimizes human error in established workflows.
Palantir, with Gotham and their AIP platform, is focused on operational intelligence. Much different goal.
Completely different. Their AI is designed to model the unknown in complex, dynamic environments. If you're trying to track the supply chain of a hostile actor, or predict where IEDs might be placed, or track a submarine's likely path, that's Palantir's sweet spot.
Fusing messy data to find things you didn't know to look for.
Exactly. Their AI fuses massive amounts of often conflicting, unstructured data to provide a dynamic decision advantage in real-time, high-stakes scenarios where the picture is incomplete and constantly changing.
So the architectural difference is critical. If you're head of Army recruiting, struggling with volume,
you choose Agentforce to optimize your known workflow. Make it faster, cheaper, more accurate.
But if you're tracking a hostile drone swarm over the Black Sea,
you need Gotham. Because its ontology allows you to model those complex real-world relationships, the drone type, its likely launching site, the command structure controlling it, its potential targets in a way that a workflow automation tool simply cannot grasp. It's about understanding intent and predicting outcomes.
Okay, then let's look at pricing and deployment model. This is the core of Salesforce's attack vector.
Right. Salesforce is pure subscription-based SaaS. Using massive enterprise license agreements funded by OpEx, leveraging their standardized multi-tenant cloud platform. It's all about broad applicability, economies of scale, and ease of mass adoption across large organizations.
Palantir remains premium, project-based.
Premium pricing, project-based, consultative services requires that CapEx funding we talked about. Their strength lies in their highly skilled forward-deployed engineers, FDEs, who embed directly with clients to solve specific hard problems on the ground.
And crucially, they operate in those hybrid on-premises and air-gapped environments.
They go where the mission demands, which often means disconnected, highly secure locations where Salesforce's standard cloud model cannot yet follow. That's a key differentiator for certain mission sets.
Now, security posture. The differences here are stark. And this is where Palantir, despite NGC2, arguably still maintains its deepest technical moat.
Agreed. Salesforce has pursued standardized compliance. Their big achievement, their cornerstone, is that FedRAMP high authorization, which, as we said, makes it fast and easy to adopt for sensitive, unclassified data across many agencies. It streamlines the process.
Palantir, however, built its reputation on bespoke hardening, highly customized security for specific needs.
Exactly. They hold DoD Impact Level 5, IL5 authorization, which is significant. But critically, they also hold the extremely rare and difficult to achieve IL6 authorization.
And IL6 is the key differentiator at the high end.
It's the absolute key. IL6 means you are cleared and accredited to handle the highest levels of classified data. We're talking top secret, sensitive compartmented information, SCI. Salesforce, with FedRAMP High for unclassified data, simply cannot compete in that classified top secret space today.
So Palantir's moat, at least for truly classified workloads, remains technically insurmountable right now.
Technically, yes. Despite the legitimate questions raised by the NGC2 security concerns about integration risks, the core platform's IL6 rating is a barrier Salesforce hasn't crossed.
But that NGC2 incident still hangs there.
Right.
Even with IL6 clearance on the core platform, does Palantir's approach to system integration, combining multiple vendors, complex code bases, risk undermining the security standards in practice?
That is the essential crisis of confidence they face. Palantir's core platform might be technically secure to IL6 standards, but if its integration practices allow third-party components to bypass vetting, as the NGC2 memo alleged, then their overall reputation for delivering secure mission systems is compromised. not just in theory, but in execution.
Okay, finally, let's touch on culture and go-to-market strategies. Very different beasts.
Night and day. Salesforce is a traditional, massive enterprise software sales machine. Huge global sales force, extensive partner ecosystem like we discussed with Infosys, and that classic land and expand SaaS strategy. Grow usage within an agency over time.
They're polished, mainstream, very focused on customer success metrics in the commercial sense.
Right. Palantir operates much more like an elite consulting firm or a specialized advisory group. Their go-to-market is driven by high-level relationships, often CEO to general, and those highly skilled, forward-deployed engineers who function more like embedded data scientists solving unique problems than traditional tech support.
Their culture is famously intense, secretive, very mission-driven.
Extremely. Which is highly effective for securing those unique multi-billion-dollar high-value contracts. But it's inherently difficult to scale that model rapidly and cost-effectively like a traditional low-touch software company can.
So we've laid out the battle lines, the strengths, the weaknesses, the politics. After this intense head-to-head collision, what does this all mean? Where does this leave the future of GovTech procurement?
Well, I think it means the rivalry is highly unlikely to end in some kind of total victory for either side. That's probably not realistic. Instead, all this competition fueled by politics, technology shifts, cost pressures, it's going to result in, I think, a new GovTech duality across the entire federal government.
A duality, meaning the market will basically split.
Irrevocably bifurcate, yeah. Creating two distinct tiers of operation. You'll have the high-end tier. This is that exquisite, tailored space for complex intelligence fusion, high-end command and control, specialized battlefield operations.
Where Palantir's unique ontology, its IL-6 clearance, its bespoke model, will continue to command a premium price.
Exactly. For the missions where cost is secondary to capability and security at the highest levels. And then you'll have the enterprise tier.
Okay.
This covers the broad, scalable functions. Logistics, personnel management, administrative tasks, citizen-facing services. And this is where Salesforce's cost-effective, OPEX-funded, FedRAMP-high platform model is likely poised to dominate.
So almost every agency will now have to figure out how to manage both. A Palantir stack for some things, a Salesforce stack for others.
That's the implication. Every agency CIO and CISO will need a strategy to manage both platforms, potentially integrating data between them, which presents its own challenges.
That integration point seems critical. How do you securely connect the bespoke hardening of Palantir systems, often designed to be isolated, with the standardized compliance of Salesforce's massive multi-tenant cloud platform? Managing that security boundary, that sounds incredibly complex.
It is incredibly complex. It's a huge challenge for federal IT teams moving forward. How do you maintain zero trust across such fundamentally different architectures?
Wall Street seems to be processing this duality already, right? They're not necessarily picking one winner.
They're processing it with nuance, yeah. You see analysts like Jim Cramer remaining staunchly bullish on Palantir. He cites CEO Alex Karp, calls him a scholar and a gentleman, maintains a high price target, $200. He's betting entirely on the uniqueness and irreplaceability of their core ontology tech for that high-end intelligence niche.
But other analysts see Salesforce's push differently.
Right. Others see Salesforce's aggressive move into defense and government as a major new catalyst for their stock growth. They realize that even if Salesforce only captures the, let's call it, lower administrative tiers of GovTech, that market still represents billions upon billions in stable, recurring subscription revenue. It's a different investment thesis.
So where does the rivalry go next? What are the future battlegrounds we should be watching?
I think there are three key areas. First, civilian agency modernization. This is huge. Think massive enterprise-scale digital transformation projects at agencies like the VA, Treasury, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services.
Places with enormous data sets and complex workflows, but maybe less top-secret data.
Exactly. These projects will force agencies to make fundamental choices. Do we go with a scalable, lower-cost platform solution like Salesforce for our big data and workflow problems? Or do we need a custom, high-end data fusion engine like Palantir? That choice will define modernization for years.
Second battleground.
Battlefield AI, but moving up the value chain. The competition will intensify for foundational roles in major integrating DoD initiatives like JADC2, Joint All Domain Command and Control.
JADC2 is about connecting sensors and shooters across all military branches, right? The integration layer.
Precisely. This is the complex middle ground, moving beyond just logistics into highly complex multi-domain decision support contracts. Both companies want a piece of that JADC2 architecture. That's a huge prize.
And third,
the talent war. It's already fierce, and it's going to get worse. Both companies are now desperately competing for the very limited pool of elite, security-cleared engineering talent, data scientists, AI specialists.
People who can actually build and implement these complex systems in secure environments.
Right. Palantir offers the allure of mission-critical, maybe more exotic national security work. Salesforce counters with competitive compensation, maybe more stability, and the chance to build highly scalable solutions using modern commercial cloud approaches. It's a tough choice for talent.
Okay, so wrapping this up, this leaves both companies with some very clear strategic imperatives going forward. What does Palantir absolutely have to do now?
Palantir must, number one, aggressively rebuild the trust narrative after the NGC2 leak. They need to prove their integration security is as robust as their core platform security. Number two, they need to articulate a much clearer bifurcated value proposition to justify their premium cost. When is Palantir essential and when is good enough okay? And third, critically, they need to build a more robust partner ecosystem to help them scale implementation beyond just relying on their own expensive FDEs.
And Salesforce. What are their must-dos?
Salesforce must, number one, build credibility through flawless, demonstrable execution of that massive Army ELA. It's their showcase. Number two, they have to carefully manage that internal political tightrope created by Benioff's shift, mitigating cultural backlash without losing political advantage. And third, they need to continue integrating and simplifying their broad suite of offerings, Sales Cloud, Service Cloud, Slack, Tableau, MuleSoft, to make the entire platform stack truly seamless and irresistible for government procurement teams. Make it easy to buy the whole package.
It strikes me that the ultimate, maybe unintended, beneficiary of this whole strategic collision, the entity that benefits most from this intense, complex rivalry, might actually be the U.S. government itself.
I think that's absolutely right. For the first time in many areas, federal agencies now have a genuine choice. Real competition between two very capable, albeit very different vendors. That forces competition. It drives innovation. It puts downward pressure on prices, all in a sector absolutely critical to national security and administrative efficiency.
Which leads us perfectly to our final provocative thought for you, the listener. Given that government procurement pressures are now effectively forcing a kind of shotgun marriage between Palantir's deep mission-critical data intelligence capabilities and Salesforce's commercial scale, cost efficiency, and workflow power, what new, entirely hybrid systems might emerge from this?
That's the fascinating question, isn't it? Will this intense pressure cooker generate fundamentally new architectural models, systems that somehow merge exquisite high-security intelligence capabilities with broad, affordable, enterprise-wide accessibility and usability? And maybe more importantly, how quickly can the defense and civilian government sectors adapt their procurement, their security models, and their workforces to manage that potentially powerful but also incredibly complex new reality? What does GovTech 3.0 look like when these two worlds fully collide?